This week's guest is only the second person to ever be named Business New Hampshire Magazine's Nonprofit Leader of the Year. We talked to Sandy Pelletier, President and CEO of Gateways Community Services in Nashua, about dedicating her career to helping people with disabilities and their families live fulfilling lives. I'm Matt Mowry, co-publisher and executive editor of Business NH Magazine and Granite Media Group.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan, co-publisher of Business NH Magazine and chief creative officer for Granite Media Group. And welcome to BizCast NH.
Christine, we are in the midst of May, and you know, I don't know about you. But I have seasons for reading.
Yes.
It's very weird. I love reading, but you get so busy. And so I find in the depths of winter, I go through a lot of books. And then my second bout is coming up in the summer, you know, when we go on vacations and I can bring my stack of books and I'm by the pool and I just can read.
Yes.
I go through. Because the kids are busy.
I go through phases like that too, where I'll be wanting to read. And then unfortunately, I hate to admit it, I won't pick up a book for like 4 months. But then I go through, I want to read all the time. Yeah, I go through reading phases like that as well.
So what are you reading?
Right now, I think I'm in a little bit of a lull. But I did just finish a book called Whale Fall.
I have that on my vacation
reading
list.
Daniel Krause, I want to say, is the author of that. I picked it up at the library. I had read about it online, and I was like, well, this seems interesting. It seemed out of my normal kind of book that I would read. It's basically, which if you have the book, you know, but it's basically about a person that goes diving and gets swallowed by a whale. And what happens?
I cannot wait.
It was really, yeah, it was definitely interesting. Kept my attention. I flew through that book. I do have another one at home right now that I took out from my local library. I can't remember what it's called, but it's very much a beachy chick lit read. And those are super fun. So I can't remember what it's called though. It's sitting on my coffee table.
Well,
how about you? Yeah.
You know me, I'm a horror fan.
Yes.
Because no matter how much stress I have in life, horror is a nice relief because no matter how bad my day is, the characters are going through so much worse.
Yes.
So it puts perspective in. I'm like, I'm not fleeing from a maniac. Yeah. Life is good. So the latest one I read, I've only been in one cruise in my life and this book is going to put me off on any others. It's called The Fourth Day. And it's because on the fourth day of a cruise, everything starts to go wrong.
Oh.
There's a fire that in the mechanical room, all the communications are gone, the navigation's gone. The ship is, you know, floating off to sea, and then all the services start to slowly kind of shut down, and then you have a bunch of people who are supposed to be on holiday realizing they're on a ship with thousands of people with a neurovirus running rampant, supernatural things going on. It's not the supernatural things that were scary in this book. It was what would actually happen on a cruise ship if these things started happening and how quickly things break down as a society. And I'm like, nope, can't do it. So it was a great read, but I'm off cruise ships because of
that. So do you have, is there a book that you would either read over and over again or a book you consider your favorite?
The Color Purple.
Oh, okay.
I know, which sounds very like, you know, oh, of course, Matt Pinky's up. But
no.
I loved that book in high school. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote my college entry essay into it. And I had someone who a teacher later commented on that got me in. I'm like, woohoo. But it was just such a humane book. And there was I really kind of identified with the character of Celie, who went through so much with, especially, you know, just feeling kind of less than, you know, and that building up of spirit that eventually happens in it. And I just loved that book and I loved Steven Spielberg's adaptation of it. So yeah, it's just, that's the book that I those are characters I don't mind reliving again and again. How about you?
Excellent. I'm a fan of kind of the classics like Pride and Prejudice or Wuthering Heights. Those tend to be my favorites.
Oh, you're so much more literary than me.
I just like that time period, you know, the romanticized aspect of that time period.
Yep.
I do love that. So Yeah. But I think we could probably talk about books all day, but we should wrap it up and talk to our guest.
Oh my gosh, because we have such a fascinating guest today. Let's dive in.
Yes. Today's guest is Sandy Pelletier. Sandy is the Chief Executive Officer of Gateways Community Services. She has 4 decades of leadership experience in the nonprofit sector, specifically in community-based service delivery systems. She has made significant contributions as the head of Gateways Community Services in Nashua, the second largest of 10 regions in the state. Under her guidance, Gateways has become a model for participant-driven services, managing a multi-million-dollar budget to support more than 2,800 individuals and their families across New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Sandy has also played a vital role in re-engineering initiatives, including new development, mergers, and significant involvement in public policy redefinition through the legislative process. Her expertise has been sought as a consultant in the field of developmental disabilities and elder participant-driven services across various states. Sandy holds a Master's of Education from the University of New Hampshire and a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Maine, with additional certifications in nonprofit management. Her outstanding work has earned her several accolades, including being named one of the 25 Extraordinary Women by the Telegraph of Nashua in 2013. In addition to her professional achievements, Sandy is actively involved in several boards, contributing her expertise to various organizations and foundations, highlighting her commitment to community service and the betterment of society. Welcome to the podcast, Sandy.
Thank you both for having me.
Well, we are thrilled to have you here and to be able to say congratulations on being the 2024 Nonprofit Leader of the Year. Our judges were blown away by everything you've accomplished. And I have to say, as the one that was writing your profile, I just don't have enough space in the magazine to be able to really do justice. So there's so much for us to talk about. And I want to start off with, so you've dedicated your career to helping to be an advocate for people with disabilities and making sure that they have all the opportunities to be part of the community and to live the fulfilling lives that they can lead. I think it's been a 43-year career or so, am I correct? And 41
yes.
of them at Gateways.
Yes.
So let's start, before we get into what got into all that, just what inspired that, and what has kept you going all these years to be in this field and to do what you've been doing?
Well, again, thank you for having me. And I'm truly honored by this award that I'm going to receive here in the coming months. So thank you again. It's been an incredible journey. And I think what's motivated me all these years, obviously, is that I know that we're trying to make a difference in people's lives. And that's what it all started. I started early in my career. I had experiences volunteering, and I think I shared with you at one point that I have a family member or cousin that I'm very close to that had a developmental disability, and I was his babysitter growing up, and I had an opportunity to witness his journey. So it's just been an amazing opportunity to be partnering with families and individuals with disabilities to try to assure that they have meaningful lives. And that's what's motivated me all these years, is that I say to many people, it's not me, it's the team of people that I get to work with. And it's really motivated by the individuals themselves that we support and watch them grow and the kind of opportunities that they are allowed to have.
When you were graduating graduate school at the University of New Hampshire, it was a very pivotal point in the state and actually the nation's history when it comes to how we view people with disabilities and their rights and their capabilities when given the proper supports. Can you talk about, and I think it was like 1991, what was happening in the state and how you were part of it?
Well, I was one of the first 4 case managers in the state of New Hampshire. And part of our job, I was based out of Salem, and I was in graduate school at the time at UNH.
And this is when they were deinstitutionalizing people with developmental disabilities. Because up until then, can you describe what the approach was?
Well, prior to that period in time, and the institutions were the services that families were given options to have for their sons and daughters. This was before many laws and policies went into place, and services were not necessarily entitled. So individuals with disabilities or children born with developmental disabilities, many people in the field would, doctors, et cetera, would say to the family members, this is an option. You can put your son and daughter into an institution, and that was happening throughout our country. And in the 70s, 60s and 70s, people started to look and say institutions were not the best approach to support individuals with disabilities or developmental disabilities. And there was this big movement around states being sued by family members. And in New Hampshire, there was a cohort of families that came together, and they formed the Garrity versus Gallin lawsuit, and they sued Governor Gallin. And I happened to be a case manager at the time in graduate school, learning about all of this, spending time
in the 70s,
right, late 70s, yep, early 80s, and getting an opportunity to go to Laconia State School and meeting individuals, some of them my age, who were placed in the institution at a very early age. And the thought was that we could do better in the community. And we were asked to start looking at what would it take for individuals to live in our community. And that was the beginning drive at that time. And New Hampshire happened with a lot of effort and policy and support by policymakers and advocacy by families. The courts ruled that New Hampshire had to create a new service system. And
was it the first state to undergo deinstitutionalization?
Yes, we were. We were a leader at that time, the first state to close its only institution, and we really moved forward to place individuals into the community.
So what was like, you were in your 20s at
the
time.
Right, early 20s.
So, you know, it's quite the first major job in your field to have like, oh, by the way, we're the first state to do this, and you're one of the first case managers that's going to be responsible for helping people reintegrate into their communities and to find those resources. What was that like?
Overwhelming.
I
honestly didn't know. I didn't know what we were doing necessarily, but there was really good partnership with the Department of Health and Human Services and other policymakers, and also with the families. And I think that's really what's guided me all these years, is I never felt like I needed to have all the answers. I felt like this was a collaboration and that we were taking this journey on together. And so it really was. It was trial and error, really basic stuff, like looking at an individual and realizing if they moved back to the community, what did they need? They needed medical care. They needed a house to live in. They needed staff to support them. They maybe needed things to do during the day. And it was as basic as that, and working with their guardians or family members and the community and saying, we can do this, we can try. So in the beginning, it was just one person at a time and trying to create some level of support necessary so they could be successful back here in their home communities.
I imagine it took some breaking down of barriers and stereotypes that people and misconceptions that people had. What was that atmosphere like, and what did it take to get people on board with, no, these are folks that should be part of our community and you want them in your community?
Well, I have a story to share. So early on, there was a number of communities in our greater Nashua area that we wanted to make buy homes to put people in, group homes. And there was pushback by selectmen, aldermen, et cetera. Neighbors got really scared when they heard what we were trying to do. And one example I have is one of our communities, will be left unnamed, really pushed back hard. And I belonged at the time to one of the churches, St. John Newman's, here in Merrimack, New Hampshire. And I was really overwhelmed by this, and it was getting a lot of political play and media play. And the pastor reached out to me because I was a member of his congregation of that church. And he said, how can I help you? And he did sermons at the church to the parishioners, describing what we were trying to do and that this was the right thing. And I can remember being there. He hosted meetings. He also used it as an opportunity to, during his sermon, during the mass services to talk about what we were doing. And it really helped make a difference. And we opened that community residence. It's still there. 3 to 4 individuals get a chance to live there, and they've been leaving meaningful lives for a long time. But that's an example of community collaboration and other people stepping up and seeing the value. But it required a lot of education. People were fearful. Neighbors, people thought you could just get developmental disabilities if somebody lived near you. I mean, there was a lot of misinformation going on.
And we'll be right back. Join Business NH Magazine in partnership with the New Hampshire Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives at the Business of the Year Awards Luncheon on May 23rd at the DoubleTree by Hilton in downtown Manchester. This prestigious Business Awards Luncheon will honor the 2024 Business Leader of the Year, Nonprofit Leader of the Year, Businesses of the Year, and Nonprofit of the Year. Network and celebrate excellence in business and leadership in the community with New Hampshire business executives and their teams. More information and tickets are available at businessnhmagazine.com/events. Sponsored by the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, Bank of New Hampshire, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Hampshire, Eversource, Northeast Delta Dental, and McLean Middleton. And we're back with Sandy Pelletier, Chief Executive Officer for Gateways Community Services. So I want to jump forward to your time with Gateways. Can you tell us a little bit about what attracted you to Gateways early on in your career? Obviously, something's working there. It's kept you there for over 40 years. But if you can give us a little bit about what attracted you there, and then also what are the scope of services that Gateways offers?
I was working at the state of New Hampshire at the time and at the Department of Health and Human Services, and they were talking about creating this. It was building on the case management system that they were talking about. You know, I mentioned I was one of the first four, and then more case managers started being hired across the state by nonprofits to do this kind of work. But the state started to look at how do we create a real strong system, a safety net system for individuals with developmental disabilities, and decided they wanted to create 12 area agencies. This was the Department of Health and Human Services, and it was a policy work by the department, by the legislature. And it was a bill called RSA 171A. But the intention was to really create community support systems for individuals. And Nashua was one of the first to be identified. There were others as well, but Nashua, they gave the authority to an organization called the Plus Company, which is still a longstanding organization that does great work here in Nashua as well. And that board decided they needed someone to help do this work. And I was encouraged to apply. And so I applied. And they hired me. They took a risk and hired this young person who had recently finished graduate school and had just a couple of years under her belt to come and work for them. And the job was to start creating a community system of support for individuals with developmental disabilities, both children and adults. And again, no pathway, just an opportunity to work in a community with people who are really committed, board of directors, et cetera. Did that for a few years, and then the board decided to split and create the area agency / Gateways Community Services a couple years later and took me with them. And that organization started to really grow and develop more services. We hired service coordinators, and that was the original intent. And our job was to bring people out of Laconia State School and prevent other people from being placed at Laconia. So that was our directive. You know, our effort, our mission was to really help people create meaningful lives in the community. And that's how it all started.
That's great. And what has that grown to? What are the different services that Gateways offers today?
We offer a pretty comprehensive level of service. Over time, Gateways has evolved. We not only serve individuals, children and adults with developmental disabilities, but we've also serve individuals who have chronic health issues, children who have chronic health issues. We also serve children with autism. We have an autism center. We started to get into the elder services about 20 plus years ago. We created a really cool adult day program for elders with Alzheimer's and dementia at Alvern High School, which is really a phenomenal program. I mentioned we have an autism center that started back maybe 8 or 9 years ago. We serve a lot of little ones with autism and really provide some really state-of-the-art interventions. We support children. We have an early intervention program for little ones, birth to three. We serve about 500 children a year. So, and we have a big service coordination team. We have about 68 service coordinators who serve both individuals with developmental disabilities, and we also have a team that supports elders who need support to stay in their communities. So pretty broad organization. Yeah. We're always looking for new opportunities, work with a great team of individuals. Every day, I think what motivates me is I leave the office and I look at the building and I know that someone at Gateways has made a difference in someone's lives today. And that's really what motivates me every day.
Well, I feel like a slug. I was like, oh, is that all that you do? I mean, it's amazing work that's being done in the community by your organization. How many folks do you have working for you to do all that?
Gateways has about 200 full-time staff and about 400 part-time staff. It varies. We lost some during the pandemic, needless to say, and we still struggle with that. But we have a great team. I have an incredible team of individuals, the leadership and management staff, all the staff that I get a chance to work with are phenomenal, and they're incredibly committed. But it's, as you said, hard work. And it's can be draining work, needless to say, too. And I think we've lost people. We still struggle with that. That's a big challenge in our field. But we have a great team, and I'm very pleased to have it. One thing that's a little bit unique, when I talk about the 400, it's about 350 to 400 individuals, we have employees that work part-time for us, but they're co-employees. They work not only for us. We are the co-employee. They work for the guardian or the individual themselves with disabilities, and they go into their homes or provide levels of support to them. And we have a pretty large growing group of those individuals. Family members are finding people that get to work for them. Maybe it's 5 or 6 hours away a week, but it really helps the individual stay independent and live in their community.
And how many individuals and families are you assisting annually?
We oversee about 2,800 people.
Wow.
And again, it's declined a little bit. It was a little bit higher before the pandemic, needless to say. We have a lot of need out there still. Part of it is we're challenged by our workforce.
And yet it hasn't slowed you down from finding other ways to serve your clients. You've got, you know, we have faced a affordable housing crisis here in New Hampshire that is particularly hit hard in the disability community. Can you talk about your new approach to that, that kind of marries that providing affordable housing for your clients at the same time maybe addressing some of the needs of your workforce?
Thank you for asking that question, because that's like an exciting new project that we're involved in and one that was really inspiring me. As you said, workforce and housing are some of the biggest barriers in our field, not just here in New Hampshire, but nationally. And I started to witness other states and their approach to supporting individuals with developmental disabilities and trying to address the workforce issue. And I thought maybe there was a way, with my staff, we started chatting, was there a way we could do something like this here in New Hampshire? Gateways owns a number of properties. Most of them are used for group homes for individuals with developmental disabilities. And we had one property here in Nashua that really needed to be reworked. We had needed a lot of construction or physical rehab. And we started to talk to the city of Nashua about a year and a half ago. And we said to them, is there something we could do with this relations to zoning? You know, is there something that we could try to do different than we've done in the past? Could we put a different kind of building? And the city of Nashua was really great. They decided to invest in it with us. They hired an architect, and the architect with the zoning opportunities and being close to downtown Nashua said to us, you could probably put an apartment building on this property. And we were like, wow, that would be really cool. And our intent was maybe we could try something different, which is we would create apartments for individuals with developmental disabilities who can live more semi-independently downtown, near downtown Nashua, where there would be transportation, public transportation, easy walking ability, et cetera. But maybe we would embed some staff in that apartment building as well. People, because a lot of our staff are struggling with work, housing cost, and test out the concept of some of the staff living in the building and providing some intermittent support to the individuals living there. And so we came up with this idea with a lot of support from the board of directors of Gateways and my leadership team. And we started to do research and working and reaching out to a lot of individuals in the state of New Hampshire in housing who are more experts at housing than we are around affordable or low-income housing, subsidized housing. And everyone's been incredibly supportive and collaborative and excited about this as a possibility. So where are we right now? We've got a design of the building, and it's really phenomenal and exciting. We have some preliminary support from zoning in Nashua. And now we're out and about trying to find funding for this kind of effort. So writing grants, working with housing foundations, New Hampshire Housing Authority, Community Development Block Grant, the city. So more to come, but we're really excited. We think that this is a future opportunity for individuals and maybe something we can replicate in other parts of the state as well.
And what is the plan for the number of people that could live in this building?
Well, right now, depending on our ability, it would be possibly 7 or 8 individuals with developmental mm-hmm. disabilities would have their own apartments, and then 2 to 4 staff, 2-bedroom apartment buildings where they would have an opportunity to be living on site as well. So we're looking anywhere from 8 to 12 individuals. Mm-hmm. Again, exactly the numbers, not there yet, but the intention would be, obviously, the majority of the individuals would be the people that we support and serve, but we would also embed, a small percentage of staff to test what that would look like, with the hope that maybe in the future we could do bigger projects like this.
Mm-hmm.
So any of our business listeners out there that are looking for a great investment for their community funds and making a difference, give Sandy a call.
Absolutely.
She has a great idea for you.
Definitely.
Knocking on lots of doors, I have to tell you.
I'm sure. I do want to go back and revisit. You had mentioned the program that you have at Alvern for Elders. And I do think it's, again, a unique approach that, that the organization takes. It's a program that's actually embedded in the high school. Can you talk about why it's structured that way, and what that does and how it functions?
A big shout out to the town of Hudson and Alvern High School. We've had a longstanding relationship with them, and it has been incredible. And we couldn't do it without their support. I have to be really candid. I mean, they have been our landlord, free landlord, for many, many, many years. We embedded it into the high school. They have a community technical education wing, where a lot of their students attend that program. And they allowed us space to put individuals, the Open This Day program. And then they would allow their students to start doing internships, like there's the students that are in their health and human service track. So we would be bringing high school students into the program. They would work alongside the staff, learn a little bit more about the field that we're in, the work, the development of the disability field.
And what kind of work would they do?
They would play cards with the individuals there, or bingo, or just, engage. Even now, at times, individuals will come, the choir will come and do a great performance for all of participants in the program, our elders and individuals that are participants that are there. So it's a great collaboration, and it's very unique. It doesn't exist anywhere else in New Hampshire, and I hope at some point that program also gets replicated. So Alvern embraced us many years back, and then even recently, they just did a total renovation of their high school. And when they renovated it, they took care of us. they created us a brand new space that we just opened later in the pandemic. We had to close down for a while. But it's a beautiful space. We have anywhere from 18, we can serve up to 25 individuals a day. This offers the caregivers a relief, and it also gives opportunity for the individuals themselves to be with others socially. And it's just an incredible partnership. And I tell everyone, it's to watch the individuals, the participants, engage with the younger generation is really phenomenal. And it's a learning experience for everyone. So it's an incredible program, Matt. It's a program that if it was my mother, my grandmother, and they needed that kind of service, I would be proud to put them there, because I think it just has, you know, it's incredible quality service, and it's a great collaboration with that high school.
And speaking of the pandemic, it was a challenge overall for everyone. It was an immense leadership challenge for anyone running a business or organization. But you have an organization where, closed or not, you have clients who depend on you for their quality of life. What was it like to have to manage your organization through that and balance safety of your employees with the safety of your clients and meeting their needs? And what did it take to get back up and running?
Well, we never closed.
Yeah.
I will never forget getting the call on March 13th, 2020, saying start shutting things down and going to a different way of delivering and supporting services. And it was alarming, I have to say. For the first few months, it was overwhelming. Staff, big shout out to the team of people I get to work with every day. They are incredible and their commitment. We were working not unlike many other healthcare systems, 7 days a week, 24/7, to just assure the safety and navigate a time in our lives, all of us, that we had never experienced before. And trying to just get to the other side was incredibly, at times, overwhelming.
I think you were sharing with me that even, you know, you had to, you had a program for children with autism and having to find a way to do that outdoors. How did you do that?
Well, a few things. And again, it speaks for me to the collaboration with our community. But we looked for new ways of providing services outside. And we would go to the parks, Greeley Park, and do assessments at Greeley Park or some school setting that had an outdoor setting. But one great example was, we were really stressed about all of this, and we were trying to find a way. We had on our office space at Canal, there was this little side garden area. And I was on a call at New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, and I was a little overwhelmed, I think, during one of those calls and sharing with them some of the challenges we were facing. And they found a donor, and the donor helped build a brand new gym area, you know, outdoor swing sets, et cetera, that were geared to individuals with disabilities. And it became our new site for assessments and for therapeutic work. And that was phenomenal. We still use it every day. Our little ones love to go out there and use all of the gym equipment that's out there. So, yeah, that's an example of how we got through some of the efforts.
So, you know, our time is coming close. It's a very fascinating interview, very quick interview. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you see for the future of Gateways? What's upcoming? I know you talked about that apartment project that hopefully will continue to move forward. Any other projects or initiatives that are coming down the line for Gateways?
I think we have to really work hard on the workforce. I think people in our society have to value the direct support people that provide supports in individuals with disabilities and elders in need of long-term care. We're aging state, right, unfortunately, mm-hmm. and we're going to need more caregivers. And that's a challenge. Individuals themselves, you know, people now graduating from college have many opportunities in front of them and many opportunities that pay a lot more wage. And if you have to put food on your table, the cost of childcare, cost of housing, et cetera. You have to receive a decent income to afford all of that. And I think people, policymakers, both in Washington and in the state of New Hampshire, have to decide that the kind of work we do has real value to some of the individuals, for all the individuals that need the kind of supports that we have. You know, be it individuals with developmental disabilities, individuals with mental health needs, people, elders with, you know, challenging circumstances like Alzheimer's and dementia. And we've got to create a career path. We also have to determine that these positions and professions are of value. So I'm hopeful. Gateways with some of our other community partners are involved in some pilot projects around that effort. We received some American Rescue money from the state of New Hampshire. And we're going to try some new ways of collaborating and working with schools, the local high schools, the community colleges, the new Americans that are coming into our state, and try to figure out if there's pipelines, career pipelines, and encourage people to enter these fields.
Well, thank you so much for your leadership and everything you do, not only for your clients at Gateways, but for the state overall, and for being a voice for people who are often too often marginalized in our society. It is very obvious why our judges selected you as the 2024 Nonprofit Leader of the Year.
Yes, Sandy, once again, is also the, in addition to Nonprofit Leader of the Year, our President and CEO of Gateways Community Services in Nashua. Sandy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the stories and information you heard on today's podcast, find more by subscribing to Business NH Magazine or visiting businessnhmagazine.com. I'm Matt Mowry.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan. BizCast NH is a production of Granite Media Group.